everyone's really risen to the occasion, though. And, you know, we all kind of turn to each other, and we all know we're messed up. And, you know, we go out there, and we do it for each other.
I never thought about it for now, but I have never played off it. I was just always on the defensive side, and I just always like to hit you.
Inside the Monarch Asylum.
A fresh take from one of the most diehard alums, born from the layout tables of the Mason Crown and raised in the studio of WODU. Now he's back and ready to lead you into a discussion about Old Dominion sports. Here's your host, my main man and yours, David Augadello.
Welcome back to the Monarch Asylum podcast. I am David Augadello. This brand new ODU football intensive related podcast, brand new for 2015. Everything's been going great so far this year. Once again, got to thank you for the support. This is episode 10. I do feel somewhat, official. 10's always a milestone. It's nice to get up in double digits. Long way to go to triple digits, but things have been going good so far this year. I appreciate the positive feedback as usual. From out there, you guys are great, and I hope you're enjoying the podcast. And if there's anything you want to hear, either tweet me at oduasylum.com, or you can hit me up on those message boards I check every now and then. I can't do them as much as some of you guys out there. I like to read them. I don't leave a lot of comments. But see me, it seems like there's a lot of arguing and bickering out there more than real conversation. But there's always a good point or two to be brought up there. Once again, my name is David Augadello. This is the Monarch Asylum podcast following your Old Dominion football Monarchs. And it is what? We got two games to go under our belt, sitting at 5-5, which isn't too bad for where we are right now in the season. The voices you heard at the top of the show are our guests, as usual, in order. Senior offensive lineman, the left tackle, Connor Mewborn. He joins the podcast, talks a little bit about the offensive line and his father, who's a rear admiral in the U.S. Navy. Which is pretty darn cool. That's really cool. So he talks a little bit about that. Then we have Martez Simpson, senior linebacker. He's on the team. Martez is always seems to be the one that fills those holes that gets created by the defensive line and comes in and hits a guy pretty hard. So Martez joins it. We also got a couple seniors. Those are two seniors on this podcast. So we get their talk. We get their insights going into the last couple games, what could be the last 2 or 3 years of their football playing careers. So those two guys, two good interviews on the show today. Listen, congratulations once again to ODU Monarch Nation, 47th straight sellout last week against UTEP. You know, that's just an awesome number, and it's good to see it rolling. I know the seats aren't always full, but at least those tickets are sold, and that's something that I think everyone, if you've ever been to one game, that's something you can definitely be proud of. Let's talk a little bit about this UTEP game. It was good to see ODU come out and handle the business the way they did, looking good. Bobby Wilder even said after the game that it felt like this is how ODU wins games. And I agree with him on that. That is kind of what it feels like. There were big plays, big drives, long drawn-out drives, key turnovers. Defenses, always a special teams play, sometimes good, usually good, sometimes bad, so there's always a little bit of everything at ODU games, but this looked like a real vintage ODU win for me. You know, Bobby Wilder talked going into the week that he wanted to treat it like a playoff game, and they clearly did. He said he saw the intensity in practice all week, that the kids were focused, and I think they definitely performed. You know, after Western Kentucky, they needed 3 out of 4 wins to be bowl eligible, and Bobby Wilder told the team he did not want to do a one-game-at-a-time approach, which I'll tell you what, is very unusual for a football coach to tell that to his teams. I've never been around a coach that would ever say, hey, listen, you know, we need to get 3 out of these 4. They're always like, let's get the next one. I mean, even to this day, you know, the Dolphins, when we interview the Dolphins, they take one game at a time. And they're 2 games under 500 and need to get back, but everything's 1 game at a time. And the season's always short. That's my other favorite. There's always a lot of football left to be played. But right now for the Monarchs, there isn't a lot of football left to be played. So it's good to see them step up in a situation that they knew was important and that coach stress was important all week. So it was good to see them do it. Let's talk a little bit more about the offense. I know that's what everyone really wants to talk about. I know it's what I kind of keep my eye on the most just because there's so much development that there's needs to be get done there. But you have to like the steps they've been making over the last couple weeks. 3 straight games in the 30s, and that's even from two different quarterbacks. You know, I know Western Kentucky was a 55-30 loss, but, you know, that was when it started to click. As Connor Mewbourne talks about later in the podcast, he talks about how they felt after that game the offense started clicking. So they've really stepped it up a notch moving the ball, which was great to see after the early year struggles. And I also like to see they've been out rushing and out passing their opponents from scrimmage for three of the last four games. You know, they out gained UTEP 441-305. Outgained UTSA by about 160, and then of course we know about the FIU game where they out rushed them and outpassed them for 50 yards, but ended up losing that game, only putting up 12 points. And then Western Kentucky was a whole nother monster. But the offense looked good, and I think there was the drive of the game at the end of the half, which Wilder mentioned specifically in his press conferences this week and after the game. ODU gets the ball with 58 seconds left in the half and three timeouts, a full complement of timeouts. And David Washington looked poised. He looked calm. He collected and just went right down the field. Had a big check down on the third and long to Cox, who broke it for a big one. Jeremy Cox, who broke it and got it down inside the 30. And that followed up with a Zach Pascal, another beautiful pass from David Washington. Touchdown, 26 yards right over the defense. And that was the two-minute drill. Actually, that was the one-minute drill. 58 seconds was when they got the ball. And Bobby Wilder credited that to their situational football. And I know talking to other guys prior to this podcast, I mean, on previous podcasts, they credit Bobby Wilder's ability to work the situational football drills in practice. And that is, it seems to me he does that a lot more intensively than other coaches, because it's such a key point of emphasis for him that, so when these guys are in these situations, they feel comfortable. I'd be interesting to see, I would like to talk to Bobby Wilder sometime about that. How does he decide which situations to do? Which situation does he want him in? Is it more defense? Is it offense? Is it both? And what's the wildest one he's ever done? Because there's always a moment. Sometimes there's a moment in a football game when you're like, what's going on right now? It's 3rd and 36. Like, how did that happen? Or 2nd and 30? Like, what's the game plan for that? What's the situational football for that? And I think Bobby Wilder is one of those guys who covers all those bases. David Washington, you have to tip your hat to David Washington. Hate to break out the cliche there, but he is just really taking this position quarterback by the hands. 291 yards, 26 of 42 passing, two touchdowns, and let's add on 12 rushing yards, 10 carries. But you know there's a couple sacks in there. But the key phrase, no turnovers. Just playing good control ball, making the right throws. And there's not a lot of near interceptions for him either. There's been a couple, but they've been on tipped balls. You don't really see the ball from David that goes towards the defender. He's fairly accurate with his passes, but those no turnovers, as Bobby Wilder said, are key. There's something really important about David Washington right now that I think that at least I'm thinking about is I think he might be winning the job for next year right now with how he's performing. I mean, how can you not? He completely turned the offense around. He's got a 378-yard passing game. He's got a 365-yard passing game. And now just throw this one on. Now he's got a 291-yard game passing game. So he has settled into the position nicely. And I think if he finishes strong, and there's no indication to think that that would change at this rate, you know, not 300 yards, three touchdowns a game, David, but there's no indication to show that he's going to slow down. He might be winning that job for next year. So I'll be interested to see how Bobby Wilder would handle that in the offseason, whether he would declare a quarterback controversy right away, saying, hey, that's an open competition. But if David finishes strong, I really believe he's going to earn that job next year. Right now he's throwing the ball about 42 to 48 times a game. I think 48 is his high, 42 is his low, other than that one game when he got injured. I'm talking to him where he played the whole game. And I think that's a lot for him. At least I thought it was a lot for him. But now I think that's about the right number, especially with the injuries at running back and the strength at receiver that ODU has. So, listen, I think Bobby's going to keep going with letting David do David. Keep putting him in situations to flourish and maybe adding a little more to the play week each and every week. And you have to give credit to David Washington, too, for, you know, he wants to throw that ball first. And I like that. Sometimes that's scary with athletic quarterbacks. You think they're going to pull it down and run real quick. David wants to throw it. He wants to throw it, and he wants to get it out. He wants to get it to his receivers. And that's what I like about watching him at quarterback. I would actually like to see him run the ball more. But if he's going to throw the ball with the accuracy that he's been throwing it with, you know, I'm fine with him being a pocket quarterback. Let's move on to the running backs. Ray Lowry, not good news from this game. He only had 5 carries, 59 yards, including a 42-yard touchdown. Still the leading rusher in Conference USA, but he left the game with a foot injury, which is actually going to keep him out of next week's game as well. We'll get more into that later. But left mid-foot sprain. He suffered it in the UT San Antonio game, and it bothered him a little bit going in, Wilder admitted. And it definitely had some impact in the game. It was a little too painful for Ray to finish, so he did not come back. And they're going to hold him out 1 week, I think, just for basically for safety precautions. Because an injury like that is an injury that could turn into a fracture, and then you need surgery, and then you're talking putting a guy on the shelf for quite a while. So I'd rather them, you know, let's have them take care of it now. And that's what the doctors are recommending. They're going to keep him in a boot for about 8 to 10 days and reevaluate him next week. So you know what that means? More carries for Jeremy Cox, who, by the way, had a great game last week. You have to really give credit to how he stepped up. He had 15 carries for 84 yards, including a 42-yard touchdown run. More importantly, he caught 4 catches out of the backfield for 70 yards. I mean, that's a 17.5-yard average. That's a nice little change of pace into the offense right now late in the season that hasn't been there all year. So the pass out of the backfield has not been something that ODU has gone to. And now with a guy like Cox who can maybe flourish in that role, it's a nice little wrinkle in the game plan that opposing defenses have to look for now. But Jeremy's going to be the man this week. He's going to have to step up. And Bobby Wilder said that this UTEP game was the best game he ever played. And part of that comes with feeling comfortable in the game plan. And I know that he had had Jeremy Cox has been having problems with blitz pickup and just kind of all that kind of stuff that comes on with being a young running back in a new system. And he's struggled with that, but now he's feeling more comfortable. And he even admitted that after the game, you know, listen to the game on the radio from Monarch Media Properties, that he said he's just feeling more comfortable with everything and that he knew when Ray was out that he had to step up and be more disciplined. And he definitely stepped up. And great game. And now he needs to follow it up with, because they're going to need points against next week. You're going to need, in Southern Miss, you're going to need points. So Jeremy's going to have to follow up this game. You know, I'll take the same thing from him, to be honest, right now. He doesn't need to hang 150 on him, but, you know, give me good 4 or 5 yards a clip. Give me some catches out of the backfield, and I think that would be a good game for him. But it was great to see Jeremy show that depth at running back that ODU will probably need now for the next couple weeks with Ray Lowry getting a little sidelined. The wide receivers, I'll tell you what, it's turned into the Zach and Jonathan show. Those two guys are dominating all the catches, but they deserve them. I mean, they are producing at an incredible clip the last 3 weeks. Zach Pascal could be playing his way into a first-team All-Conference USA recognition or second or third team at worst with what he's been doing. 12 catches, 145 yards, and a touchdown, a beautiful touchdown that we talked about earlier, capping that drive at the end of the half. And just really, you know, just kind of turn into that lead dog that I think every team needs. I think they need that receiver that's kind of the lead guy. And Zach has taken that, and he's run with it, and he's one of those guys you can tell he's going to do whatever he needs for his team to win. His second straight game with 10 catches. And you know what I like about this game against UTEP was he averaged about 10 to 13 yards a catch. 12 catches, 145 yards. The longest was the 26-yard bomb to end the half. So that's about 11 to 13 yards per catch. And they were all just moving the chains. Every time he caught the ball, it seems like the chains were moving. And you can see the confidence that him and David have together. They've really turned into a nice little combo. Jonathan Duhart, you know, Robin to Pascal's Batman. Good game, not statistically, but I like the fact that his first catch, which came late in the game, you know, normally that could frustrate a young receiver. They don't get the early catches. They maybe take a little bit off, but, you know, Duhart didn't. His first catch late in the game, he got a touchdown later than that. He finishes the game, 5 catches, 49 yards, and a touchdown. I like the fact that he didn't let the early struggles affect him, because that's very easy to do. Now let's talk about this defense. The defense, wow. I mean, defense. Wilder, Bobby Wilder called this, quote, one of the best defensive performances we've had at ODU, end quote. And it's hard to disagree with them. I mean, you can, especially when you look at the dominance they had in the second half. They started out slow, giving up a touchdown drive on the very first drive of the game. But they changed some things. They made some good adjustments. And Bobby Wilder credits defensive coordinator Rich Nagy for upping the run blitz and moving Felonte Mischer a little closer to the line. That it gave a little, it gave them a little tweak that they weren't, that they probably didn't think they were going to see. And Bobby also said it just took them time to get used to that two tight end set, which is not a set that they'd normally be seeing this year. So that took a little bit of adjustment time. Overall, they hold the rushing attack to only 122 yards, 55 after the first quarter. You know, Bobby Wilder mentioned that as one of the key statistics in his mind. And with the way ODU was getting run over in several games before, it's, you know, when you can control that line of scrimmage, it does, it always favors you. First half, the stand of the game. First half had the defensive stand of the game. Off the big punt return, ODU gives up a big punt return. UTEP gets down close to the close, ends up driving down to first and goal at the two, and they get held to 3 points. Once again, it's that, and I talk a little bit about this with Martez Simpsons later, it's that kind of bend it but don't break defense. How we're going to give up yards, we're going to make some mistakes, but when we need to, we're going to come up with a play. And they don't always make the play. Other teams score on them. You know, I don't want to make it sound like they always make the play, but I just seem to know when I watch them, at least one or two of those drives a game, maybe three, there's going to be a big play, a big way to end it. Hey, and you know who ended several of those drives? No one played bigger than Felonte Mischer in that last game. Congratulations, Conference USA Defensive Player of the Week. He earned it. Two interceptions, three third down tackles, thwarting an onside kick. I just wanted to use the word thwart. And I believe he had seven tackles. I mean, just a great day for Felonte, you know, and making those interceptions late. Just drive killers, just daggers to the heart, you know, a team trying to get back in it. And you throw a pick when driving, you know, those are momentum plays. So Felonte really has played, you know, I think the 15th leading tackle in Conference USA and really just played a great job back there all year for Monarchs in the secondary playing safety. You know, the defense, once again, a complete team. They all came through together. Justice Davila, 10 tackles. Bumi Rotimi with the sack. O'Shane Zimini's had some nice plays. And Martez Simpson, I mean, he just seems to have at least two or three big hits a game. I mean, he just brings it in. And those that defensive line has been occupying guys to let those linebackers, pursuing tackling linebackers, go get those guys. And, man, Martez Simpson talks about that, how he just likes to hit later in the podcast. And what I find interesting is he's never played offense in his life. I find that fascinating. The fact that he played Little League football and has never played offense in his life, because normally guys are all over the place, especially if you're a good athlete. But, so he talks a little bit about that. But overall, just listen, a great performance. Just a great performance by ODU defense, really stepping up those key turnovers late. The three and outs, they just dominated the second half performance. Seven of the eight drives in the second half of that ball game ended on an interception or a punt. And they had three and outs in the third quarter. So they only gave up one first down in the entire third quarter as I was logging the game. That's just dominance. That's just controlling a team. A lot of third and tens, a lot of early pressures, a lot of stopping the runs and forcing them into long yardage. And that's exactly what they did the entire second half. And it was good to see. And it's something that hopefully they can build on. And hopefully they, you know, because they're going to have a big challenge this week going into Southern Miss. So they could. It's nice to have a performance like that on their resume and a performance from UTSA where the defense also stepped up again and made some big plays late to seal that one. But anyways, we'll talk a little bit more football with a couple players. I had to go with the seniors, wanted to talk to these guys. Know they've been on the team for quite a while, particularly Connor Mewborn, offensive tackle out of Virginia Beach. He'll be coming up next. And then after him, Martez Simpson, also a senior linebacker. But right now, here's a little Jimmy for you before we talk to Connor. Bye. keeping it on here in the Monarch Asylum podcast, keeping the chains moving, as Bobby Wilder always says. Want to welcome one of the veterans on the team, redshirt senior, offensive tackle, coming in at 6'4" out of Virginia Beach, First Colonial High School, Connor Mewbourne. Mewbourne, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Mewbourne.
Mewbourne. And how's practice this week, getting ready for the next game versus Southern Miss?
Well, it's been intense. You know, Southern Miss is a great team, and we are, you know, working our tails off to get prepared for them. So the intensity level has definitely, gotten a little bit higher. But, you know, like Coach Wilder says, you know, we respect all of our opponents, who fear none. So the approach has generally been the same, you know, like I said, just a little bit more of a sense of urgency.
I want to get more into that a little bit later, but I got to just want to talk a little bit right now about just the challenge that you guys have had at offensive line this year. I know the last couple of weeks, Coach Wilder has gone out of his way to mention what you guys have been, really the challenge you've been going through, the not really the major injuries, but the little knickknacks, the shuffling of the line, the guys playing here this week and there next week. How much of a challenge has it been?
You know, as offensive linemen, we don't really like to talk about,
I know that.
But it has been challenging. It has its challenges. Everyone's really risen to the occasion, though. And, you know, we all kind of turn to each other, and we all know we're messed up. And, you know, we got there, and we do it for each other. You know, that's kind of our mentality is, you know, you're hurt, I'm hurt. You know, let's go out there and let's get it done.
How much does it help having a veteran line in that situation? Because, I look at you're a redshirt senior. Burns, another senior, you know, you got some juniors on there. We know it's a young team, but there is some veteran experience, you know, especially with yourself with basically 30 starts under your belt. How much does that help?
It's huge. You know, we have, Tyler Burns at guard, as you said, and we have Troy Butler right now at left guard. You know, he's played a lot of football for us. And then, you know, Nick Clark is a freshman at center. But, you know, he's actually more of a veteran than a lot of the guys older than him. You know, he's kind of an old soul. But having veteran guys definitely helps, I think, let these guys, you know, see what it's all about. And, you know, we've been through it. We've been hurt. You know, we know the difference between injured and hurt. And, you know, we can play through that kind of stuff.
It seems to me it's kind of been like a tale of two seasons for the offense. We all know about the struggles early, but then around midseason, you started hitting your stride. And then in a loss to Western Kentucky, you come out and basically after the game that the offense has turned the corner. What did you mean when you said that to your team?
Well, I felt that we were clicking as an offense. You know, we didn't accomplish what we wanted to that game, but there was a different energy between us. We were all looking at each other differently as we were getting the calls and, you know, and moving the ball. I felt it on the offensive line, and we felt it with, you know, our receivers and our, you know, running backs. We were all talking, telling each other, all right, let's go get this one. It was just, you know, it's that intangible stuff, that vibe stuff, that I was really feeling. You know, we were starting to click.
You know, I was on this tip early in the season with the loss of the tight end, losing Melvin Vaughn and Adam Swan really hurt you guys because I know it affected you, what you wanted to do. You know, that's ancient history now. And I think it just took you guys that extra game or to realize what your offense had. Do you think that was part of it too? Kind of having to, once the game started, losing those two tight ends so close to the season, when the game started, you kind of had to learn on the fly what now worked as opposed to what worked in camp.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question that losing those guys hurt us and set us back. I think that's, you know, the best way to say it is it set us back. You know, we went into camp, changing kind of our style of play and really, spring ball too with, you know, throwing in some more power stuff and, you know, using our tight ends. And then all of a sudden they get taken away from us and, we go back to, you know, the air raid and, you know, it's something that we knew how to do. But we also had to adjust to it a little bit differently because we also didn't have Taylor Heineke back there. So it was just kind of growing pain and even more so when, like you said, we got this tight end taken away from us.
Speaking of the quarterback, what have you seen from David Washington? You know, there's a big question mark when he comes in, and all he does the very first game is throw for over 300 yards, the four touchdowns, and he just seems pretty comfortable back there. What have you seen from him developing when he got the job and where he is right now?
Well, David is, you know, one of the best team players I've ever met in my life. You know, you tell him that he's playing offensive tackle, and he's going to go out there and he's going to block his tail off. You know, he rose to the challenge. He rose the occasion. You know, we needed some help, and he stepped in and did a, you know, obviously a beautiful job for us, you know, in the quarterback position. And otherwise he would be killing it at receiver, you know, if that's what the team needed. You know, I can't say enough about how much of a good guy he is, you know, from his character perspective and how he really cares about the team.
And what about when he's playing? Because I'd imagine the message to you guys have to be, too, is with a guy like David who can extend with his feet. He doesn't do it often, but he can. You really got to play to the whistle. I mean, because you know at any point you could break it out. Is that something that you guys had to reteach yourself to, especially with the change from Shuler to Washington? Because they kind of have those different styles.
Definitely. They both sit in the pocket a little bit different. That definitely takes some time to get used to. And that's just, you know, comfortability piece, you know, how comfortable he is in the pocket and how comfortable we are with him behind us, and just knowing each other's movements. You know, it just takes a little bit of adjustment, but, you know, once we kind of get the timing piece down, it's all good from there.
230 points showings by the offense in the last two games, two big wins. Where is the offense's confidence right now? How confident is it moving forward?
Well, we're a pretty confident group right now. Like I said, we have nothing but respect for Southern Mississippi, and we know it's not going to be, you know, the same kind of play, you know, against them. However, you know, we have confidence ourselves. We know that we can put points up on the board. It just depends upon if we're, you know, gonna execute or, you know, stop ourselves in those tough situations that we've done before. That's a kind of a growing up piece. We've had some trouble kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. And as long as we can eliminate those mistakes, our confidence is peaking right now.
You talk about the intensity increasing, and I know Bobby Wilder last week basically said the playoffs started early. One win to get bowl eligible. And I know a lot of the fans sometimes, hey, we make a bowl game, great. We make a bowl game, okay, it's early, we'll get one next year. But I know for players like you, you know, you've got two games left in your college career, or potentially three, you know, with the bowl game. That's huge. How important would it be to get ODU's first bowl game for you as a player and for these seniors to make that happen?
You know, I can't even describe what it would be. It means so much to me. You know, I'm a player that got recruited to play in, you know, the CAA, which is B1AA. You know, I played in the football championship subdivision, and, you know, making the transition and going to a bowl game, you know, I think that'd be a great cap, you know, for my career. It's something that I've always, you know, you grow up watching bowl games, you know, around Christmas time when you're a kid, and it's something that I've always wanted to do, obviously. You know, I'm sure every other player has wanted that dream. So, you know, to be able to accomplish that my senior year, you know, we just, you know, make my career, really.
What have you learned about yourself this year? Because that is an interesting road. You start, you know, in the FCS, you know, against probably less dominant teams, and now you've played NC State a couple years and some real dominant, you know, some big boys on those lines in Conference USA. How has that challenge been for you personally, and how do you think you've handled it?
The challenge has been great. You know, it's something that we all wanted. You know, not once has anyone ever said, you know, man, I wish we would have, you know, stayed in the CAA. You know, everyone on this team is competitive, including myself. And personally, I think I've, you know, risen to the occasion. I think I've stuck it to those teams that, you know, didn't recruit me to go D1A, you know, and being, you know, a three-year starter. So, you know, personally, it's, you know, I feel good about it. So.
I've got to change the pace just a little bit. Just finished up. We'll ask a couple more questions here with Connor Mewbourne. I see that your father is a rear admiral in the U.S. Navy.
Yes, sir.
Wow. So you know the Navy lifestyle as much as anybody. What was that like growing up? Because I was reading his bio, and wow, that's quite an impressive bio.
Oh, it's very impressive. He's he's the most impressive man I know. He's my hero. But growing up with him, it's what you'd expect. He's very strict, but fair. You learn. You have these ideals instilled in you very early. Respect, discipline, work ethic, things that have absolutely no question translated to football. And I can't thank him enough for those lessons that he taught me. And I thank the Navy, too, for giving that to me as well.
Yeah, my father was in the Navy, so that was what brought me to Virginia originally. But my father worked on the ships. Your dad, over 3,600 total flight hours on over 50 various aircrafts. Basically, if it flies, your father can probably fly it. Do you have any cool tales of any interesting planes or trips that you took that where your dad was the pilot?
I think the coolest thing that I've been a part of is, I've done a couple Tiger cruises the first one I did was on the USS Nashville.
And I'm sorry, what's a Tiger Cruise? What's a Tiger Cruise?
I'm sorry. A Tiger Cruise is basically like when the family is invited on board. It's usually at the end of a deployment. When the ship is making its way back, they stop at the port. They'll pick up, some family members, and then, take a 2-day trip to go back to, their final destination, which is Norfolk. So we got on the ships in Florida, and then 2 days later we're in Norfolk for the ships coming up to their 6-month deployment. So the Tiger Cruise is just something that they do for the family, essentially. And when I did a Tiger Cruise, I think my favorite one was on the USS Nashville, which is a amphibious assault vehicle. It's a this really cool ship that basically looks like a truck kind of shape. And if you can imagine the bed of the truck can sink into the water and flood itself.
Okay.
And then boats can go in and out of this larger boat. It's a really cool experiment So they take us up on one of those, if you can imagine D-Day in Lille, France, those boats that the guys, run in on the beach, they have the big door in the front and they drop down on the sands,
Yes.
So the whole family kind of loads on one of those. And we drive out to the ship, and the ship literally drops down into the water, floods itself, and then the smaller boat that we're in goes inside of the other one. So it's the coolest thing. I'm probably not doing it justice, obviously, trying to describe it.
No, it's perfect. How old were you on that trip?
I think somewhere around 12?
Yeah.
13, maybe? So, I don't know, that's only one thing, that sticks out in my mind. But growing up with him, as my father's just been, amazing.
Now, I could imagine, has he had a chance to watch you play, being so close to the Norfolk Naval Base? Does he get a chance to peek at any of the home games?
Yes, sir, yes. My parents moved away after my freshman year to Chicago, or Naval Station Great Lake, and then to Everett, Washington. And now this year they finally came back, so they're able to make kind of my senior season, after being away for so long, never really getting a single start. So this year has been really special. In fact that they've been to just about every game or every home, they've been to every home game, so it's been really, really awesome that my dad's just seen me play.
Well, congratulations on that. So last question for you. I know it's a special year for you so far. What do you got to do to make it more special? What do you guys do to come out and get those 6 wins and get that bowl eligibility with these last 2 games?
We just have to, hunker down as a team, really rise to the challenge of having a sense of urgency that Coach Wilder talks about. And what would make it special is getting that bowl game,
Well, they have one in Miami. I'm pulling for Miami or the Nassau Bahamas. I know you don't have to keep a pulse on that. You guys just play that. You leave that for guys like that, us. But right now they got you guys maybe in the Miami Miami Bowl, the Miami Beach Bowl, which is beautiful down here right now, or the Nassau Popeyes Bowl. Yeah, I'm going for the Nassau Popeyes Bowl. That one works a little better for me. But, hey, Connor, thank you for your time. Good luck the rest of the season, and hopefully you get that bowl game.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Keep it going in the Monarch Asylum. Pleased to welcome senior linebacker, number 36, Martez Simpson. Martez, how was practice today?
It was pretty good practice. We had very little mistakes to just bounce the ball. Yeah.
I want to talk to you a little bit about that last game. You had six tackles versus UTEP. And what does the defense feel on that game? Because it looks like to me it was one of your more dominant, definitely overall performances of the half, but of the season. But definitely the second half was definitely the defense's most productive half of the season. What was your team defense takeaway from that game?
We were very happy how we played and that we had very little mistakes. And then we finally clicked on all cylinders on the defense.
How has it been working with that young defensive line? Because I know those linebackers, you got good veteran linebackers and then a young defensive line. How is it working with those guys, making sure you guys are on the same page, especially with some of the difficult running attacks you've faced this year?
They're a very good group of guys. We always work with them in practice, and we always go through our drills together. So we always have good chemistry with them. So it's not that bad.
I want to talk about you a little bit. I see that you were a JUCO transferring from Pearl River. What was JUCO college like? What was that experience like for you?
I mean, it was a very good time. It was also a hard time. We all had the same goal of getting out of JUCO and then making it somewhere else to continue playing football on a bigger level.
Why did you have to go the JUCO route?
Coming out of high school, I didn't have D1 offers. And I felt like I was better than B2 or anything like that. So I just want to take my shot at going to go and try to get better.
Why do you think that happened? Why do you think you didn't get any offers?
In high school, I played defensive end. I played defensive end in high school. So I was undersized.
Yeah.
So I had to go to go and run up in linebacker too.
Yeah, and I saw you were a 2-year starter linebacker. Did you go right away to playing linebacker there? And that's kind of where you settled in?
Yes, sir. Linebacker was a fit for me.
And why was that? You know, why did you feel you fit so well at linebacker?
Because I'm better standing up, and I still have like the type of pass rush for the end if I had to like blitz off the edge or anything like that. And I'm more athletic than most D linemen.
When did you first start playing football? Because it seemed to me like you're pretty instinctual on the field. You always seem to make, you know, 3 or 4 key plays, tackle for losses, or right at the line of scrimmage. How early did you start playing football?
Well, growing up in Mississippi, we really had nothing to do but play football or basketball, so I started around the age of 6, I think.
And when did you realize you wanted to play defense? Or did you play a little bit of everything, or did they stick you on defense? Have you played more time on, as a little kid, did you play mostly offense or defense?
I usually played defense the entire time. I never really played. I'm an offensive side of the ball.
Oh, really? Even as a little kid, you were primarily, what position you play as a little kid? You play a lot of linebacker, or what do you play?
I was D-line. I was just mainly D-line in high school. I mean, not high school. When I was a little kid, because I was a little bigger back then.
So you really haven't played any offense in your life? Because I know a lot of times kids play all over the place, but you haven't played much offense?
Never. I never played offense a while ago. I always played defense.
Seriously, you never thought you could. I mean, that's it. I find that interesting because so many, you know how it is. Usually if a guy's a running back, he's a linebacker. If he's a receiver, he's a corner. If he's a lineman, he's a D lineman. But you only play defense. How does that happen?
I never thought about it for now, but I have never played offense. I was just always on defense side. And I just always like to hit you.
Yeah, I could imagine. Yeah, and it's funny, interesting you never had that desire. Let's talk a little bit more about this defense. What do you like about where it's at right now?
I think we're in a good spot right now. Like, we always had to understand the defense, but now it's just like all about not making many mental mistakes, which we are doing right now. So I feel like the defense can go nowhere but up from here.
It also seems to me to be, I think your real strength is it's an opportunistic defense. Like, you guys will give up some yards. You'll give up a 70-yard drive. But then you'll get that stop and force a field goal. Or you get that late fumble or that interception. How, is that something that's instilled in you guys through the coaching staff? Or why do you think you guys are successful like that?
Our main goal is really not let them score or get that many yards. We're always trying our best to stop their run game, anybody run game. So we can just make them one-dimensional. But for some reason, it just happens that way. But we're trying to work. We're trying our best to work on it and stop that from happening.
All right, last couple questions for you. You know, I look at the scoreboard, and, you know, last week, your next opponent, Southern Miss, hangs 65 points on a team. You know, when a team puts a number like that and you going in, you know, what kind of mindset do you have going into a tough place to play in Southern Miss and an offense that looks to put up some points?
Just going in and trying to, first of all, stop the run and just make them one-dimensional so we can plan for that, honestly.
Last question for you. I was just talking to Connor Mewborn. You know, I know a lot of fans with a bowl game, if they get it, great. If not, you know, they know it's a young team. But for guys like yourself that are a senior, guys like Connor that are seniors, what would it mean to get this team to its first, this organization to its first ever bowl game in your senior season?
I mean, it would mean a lot to us because we'll be the first class to do it. So we'll be a part of history. And plus, us seniors, we would love to go out on top. And going to a bowl game, somewhere warm.
Yeah, I was telling Connor that it's not your jobs to keep a pulse on it. That's our jobs. And right now, I guess you're slotted for the Miami Beach Bowl, which, by the way, it's beautiful down here right now. I'm based in Miami. But I'm pulling for the Nassau Popeyes Bowl in the Bahamas. That's what I'm pulling for.
Anyone in my great team.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Martez Simpson, senior linebacker, thanks for your time. Good luck the rest of the season, and then go out and hit someone hard for us.
All right, thanks.
Last block here on the Monarch Asylum podcast. Let's recap the music you've heard in today's 10th episode. Very proud of that once again. Thanks again for everyone that is making this popular and that are enjoying it. But anyways, the music we heard, Jimi Hendrix, Voodoo Child, just a classic. You gotta love that one. It's Time by Imagine Dragons. It's a very good album, too. You know, it's got some poppy stuff on it. You've probably heard a couple of those songs a million times already. It's a very solid first album by Imagine Dragons. And the last song you just heard, RJD2 with All For You. I just kind of discovered RJD2. He does kind of, he's a DJ, I guess, technically, but he does kind of beats like that with not many lyrics in it, you know, kind of like the old school beats with some, you know, new stuff. He's good. That's my work music. When I sit down to put my thoughts together for the podcast, that's what I like to listen to because I can't do lyrics. I get singing and I get, you know, it gets me thinking on other stuff. So I like those little beats. That's what I listen to when I'm working on the podcast, and that's what I'm listening to when I work on the Coach Dan Campbell show for the Miami Dolphins. I just put on those beats, Pandora channel, RJD2, and I just kind of groove while I work. So, but I'm bored you enough with that. Anyways, let's move on to the next game. Hey, it's a big one. Playoffs continue. If you listen to Bobby Wilder, they want to get 3 of 4. Now they're getting delusions of getting 4 of 4, and why not? Go for it. Southern Miss, a trip to Hattiesburg, is on the line. Sorry, hit the microphone there. Right now, Odie, you're 21-point underdogs. 21 points. Hey, fine. We're used to it. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know even how they get those numbers sometimes, especially for these mid-major teams where teams get hot and cold really quick. But 21-point underdogs, I mean, the way ODU's playing, I would like them to cover, but nothing would shock me at this point. Bobby Wilder's calling this Southern Miss team arguably the best team they've played all season based on the role they're on, and they're on a major role right now. A 44-11 average score in the last 4 games, including wins over UTSA, UTEP, Charlotte, and they just crushed Rice 65-10, which does skew that stat line a little bit. But just a team that's just rolling right now. They got their quarterback back. He's looking really good. Nick Mullins, 386 yards last week, 5 touchdowns, all in the first half, both of them records. And they set a school record last week, 682 total yards and 501 passing yards. Of course, that was at Rice, who was supposed to be good early in the season, but turns out is not that good. And they like to spread the ball around, this Southern Miss team. So it's going to be a nice challenge. It's going to be a major challenge, especially with where ODU is at right now. You know, the defense is playing as good as it has been in probably ever. I mean, let's be honest about that. Probably ever. But definitely, without a doubt, this year, just really playing on a high point. So this is a nice challenge to have to go on a road in probably a tough environment and play a team that is clicking offensively. So it's a big challenge for the defense. And it's a challenge for the whole team, mostly because of, Bobby mentioned it this week, the injuries. They're banged up. It's been a long season. They got 10 games under their belt. They have two more. And they've had a lot of guys carrying heavy loads that aren't used to carrying those loads. When you talk about playing 30 to 33 or 35 true freshmen or redshirt freshmen and sophomores, first or second year players, that those guys aren't used to carrying that kind of load, especially at this level with these size of guys. So they're going to have... they're going to have some nicks and bruises. Of course, everyone does this time of year, but it doesn't surprise me that ODU might be hurting a little more from that. Especially, they've had guys play a lot of snaps. First and foremost, on the injury front, no Baby Bull, no Ray Lowry. I mean, that's going to be a real challenge. Leeds Conference USA, 1,128 yards. You know, we know the type of runner he is. I don't have to tell you how good Ray Lowry is. But that's going to hurt. That's going to might change the game plan a little bit. I alluded to it earlier. Jeremy Cox is going to start. You might see some Kayshawn Strong. You might see a couple other guys back there. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zach Pascal line up at running back a little bit. But it's going to be Jeremy's job. It's going to be his to get go. He's going to have to be the bell cow back this week. So I want to see how he responds to that. And I think we're going to see a couple more passes out of the backfield. I alluded to that earlier. Talking about the game recap, I like that dimension out of the backfield. It gives the defensive something completely fresh to look at. And I think that could be a nice little, you know, change of pace for the Monarchs this week. The offensive line, you know, they've been warriors. You know, I hate to use that term too much in football because it's football. And warriors usually, you know, it's more, you know, a little more serious. But these guys have been tough, man. You know, Connor Muehlborn didn't even want to talk about it when I brought up the injuries. I mean, these guys don't want to talk about it. It's get the ice, get the tape, wrap it up, and let's rest it and get back to work. And, you know, Bobby Wilder even joked this week that they're using most of their budget on training tape right now for the offensive line. And they had some big boys, so they're probably going through a lot of tape and ice. But listen, the offensive line, you know, there's some upperclassmen there. They're playing really well together, and they're just doing patchwork. And, you know, you got to give them credit for how tough they've played this year, for how many snaps some of them have played, you know, especially at speed sometimes, having to block extra rushers. So, you know, offensive line is going to be another challenge, but they've been used to it the last couple weeks. Listen, and like Bobby Wilder said, it's the 15th week of football, if you include, you know, training camp and all that stuff. So no one's really at 100% this time of year. Everyone's some version of hurt or injured. So, you know, you got to put that behind you. You got to go out there and you got to perform. And this offensive line has shown that it has the ability to do that. You know, Bobby Wilder said it. He says this team's confident. They're very confident, especially, and they have the right to be when we look how the offense has been playing. I would just be cautious about getting too confident going down to Hattiesburg. You know, you don't want to let this game get away from you, and that can happen real quick with a team like that on the road. You know, Bobby said they're approaching this game with, they have everything to gain and nothing to lose. They are multiple touchdown underdogs, and he's absolutely right. I mean, you lose by 21, you're supposed to, you know. So go out, leave it all on the field, and, you know, see what you can do. Because I think you have a chance, you know, because of the way you've been playing. You know, Bobby says he sees the focus on the team. He sees the improvement. He's seeing these young guys grow up. And let's be honest, they're not really – these guys who are first and second year, you can really put them in their second or third year now. A true freshman is not a true freshman who's played anymore, who's got 10 games under his belt. Redshirt freshman is not a redshirt freshman with 10 games under his belt. So there's some young experience on that now. So we've added a season. So let's see. Let's see what they do going into this third playoff game, as Bobby Wilder has put it. Yeah, I love the fact those guys are buying into that, too, if they really are. But like I said, Bobby said they have everything to gain, nothing to lose, you know. And this team feels that with David Washington quarterback, these are Bobby's words, not mine, that they can play with anybody, you know. And I think they can on two things, though. I got two sidesteps to that. You can't turn the ball over. They just can't turn the ball over. I think they play best when they, of course, everyone plays good when you don't turn the ball over. But this ODU team really needs it. And I just can't see the stupid penalties anymore. The flags, the unsportsmanlike for celebrating after a first quarter sack, some of the stupid stuff we see on special teams. You know, they need to play a clean game. They can't have a lot of penalties. You know, they need to go in and just do what they've been doing, but no turnovers, no penalties. Keep it a clean game, and I'd like their chances. I know there was some talk about the team just getting the 3 of 4 wins, but now I think it's time to go for 4. Try and get all 4. Get this one. Don't settle for 3 of 4. You got the first 2. Go get this one. Go make the last week academic and make it for something even better than 6 and 6. You know, make it for 7 and 5. But I think they have a chance. I really think they have a chance this week. You know, Bobby Wilder knows how to push his team's buttons, and they seem to respond to him. You know, some of that you have to take his word for, because he tells you, you know, from what he's seen in practice. And just so you know, in 12 years of covering the NFL and the Miami Hurricanes down here, I've never heard a coach say they've had a bad practice. I think maybe once I heard Tony Sperano say it. I always say Soprano. Maybe one time I heard Tony Sperano say that they had a bad practice. But even then, he said they weren't focused. But I don't think he ever used the word bad. So, you know, but Bobby Wilder knows how to push his team's buttons, and I think he'll have them ready to play. Like I said, I'm just a little confidence of a little wary of overconfidence and going there, you know, on a hot streak, you know, feeling they can beat the world. So, you know, just be a little mindful of that. You know, let's look ahead. What does this game mean? Let's give a little bowl game look ahead. What this game means for the Monarchs. You got to change by the day. You know, when I talked to those guys, I thought ODU was favored to be in the Miami Beach Bowl. Now it turns out that they're not. So now the favorite, ladies and gentlemen, wait for it, is in Tucson, Arizona. That's where they are favored to go right now. It looks like what's it, the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. That's okay. Just that another weird, you know, they probably do those bowl. I bet you people sponsor bowl games for 1 year. Just spend all that money, get that one time hit, then move on. But the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl, that's a mouthful. But once again, let's look at the Conference USA picture real quick. There are 7 bowl bids, including a loose 8th, depending on other conferences. The Independence Bowl has a couple caveats in it. But right now, locked in 7 bowl bids. 4 Conference USA members. That's a mouthful, 7 bowl bids. Anyways, the RL Carrier Dome, Carrier New Orleans Bowl, the Miami Beach Bowl, the Bahamas Bowl, the Heart of Dallas Bowl, the St. Petersburg Bowl. Those are the top 5 right now, and those are pretty much locked up from everyone you've talked to, you know, barring a real meltdown by Middle Tennessee State. But those are pretty much locked up by Marshall, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss, and it looks like Middle Tennessee State, unless something happens and they lose 2 terrible games to end the year. So you basically got 4 teams fighting for 2 positions. Now, the leader in the clubhouse for those 2 positions are right now ODU and Rice, because ODU just needs to get 1 more win to get to the 6, and they have a winnable game against FAU at home at the end of the season, and they're a little hot right now. So if they can get to 6-6, they looked favored to get one of those bowls. The other one who will probably get a bowl is Rice. Rice right now is 4-6, but they finished with 2 games at UTSA and versus Charlotte. So they have a good chance, because those are 2 teams that are very winnable. Those are 2 teams that ODU beat, and those are 2 kind of bottom feeders in the conference. The only sticking point is Rice has lost 5 of 7. So how much do you expect a team that's been struggling to go on the road and beat a UTSA team? You know, that might be a little bit much with their struggling. But those are the 2 leaders right now for the last 2 bowls. The last 2 bowls, by the way, are the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl and the Gildan New Mexico Bowl. So either way, it looks like if the Monarchs do get to go bowling, it will be out west. But the last 2 teams still fighting for a bowl game. Let's look at FIU real quick. FIU is 5-6. They have one game left. They get to host Western Kentucky, so that's a lot to ask for a FIU team to get to that six wins right now. Because you know Western Kentucky, we know what they do. They're fighting for even higher seeding. They want to go to the biggest bowl they can, and a win would definitely help them. And there's another wild card there. You know, I've talked about Brandon Dowdy before, but that's his homecoming. He is from South Florida, so he might have a chance to play in front of some family. So that might be a little extra motivation for him to perform. And finally, UTEP. UTEP is 4-6, and they get Louisiana Tech at home this week, which is the Western Division leader in Conference USA. If they can somehow beat them at home, which will be a big task for them. Then they go to at North Texas, a 1-9 team, possibly 1-10 team after this week. So UTEP, you know, has a chance to get in there too. But first and foremost, when you look at those four teams, ODU needs one win and they have two games left. FIU needs one game and they have one game left. And the other two teams have four wins. So ODU gets the one win. Odds are they're going bowling. So like I said, let's go get it this week. Let's get it this week. Let's not wait till let's not put it on the end, though. You know, it's always ODU always tend to give you a little heart attack with the football games. They like to push it to the end. But, you know, I'm looking for a good performance this week. All right, let's wrap things up. Once again, I got to congratulations on some of the ODU players this week. Felonte Mischer, Conference USA Defensive Player of the Week. You know, the fourth player this year to get that honor for a Monarch, including Ray Lowry, Zach Pascal, and TJ Ricks. So two offense, two defense. Congratulations to Zach Pascal. 12 catches, ties the school record with Nick Meyer. Just every day, every week now. He's coming in, and he's the focus of the offense, the passing game. The defenses know it, and he's performing every week. If he can get his hands on it, he's going to catch it. He's having a terrific season. TJ Ricks, got to give some congratulations to TJ Ricks. He is the leading tackler in Conference USA, which is awesome, but he is up for a scholarship for being one of the top 10 walk-ons in the country, you know, which is really, really cool. You know, that's why one thing going forward with this podcast, you're never going to hear much recruiting talk from my end because I'm not big into recruiting. Because to me, I don't believe in the 4 stars, the 2 stars, and the 3 stars. Like, just show me on Saturdays that you can play and show me in practice you can play. I just believe once you get a star, I just don't believe in that star system. You know, it's the same thing like in the NFL. The first round pick, you know, plays on the same field as a 7th round pick when training camp starts. So I'm not really big into the recruiting, but you know, you got to give it up when you can get a guy like TJ Ricks to walk on and be productive as he has been. And, you know, I mean, leading conference tackler in Conference USA, 10th in the country, I believe is the exact number. And that's, you got to love that. That's good inspirational football. And that's something that, you know, that's always a good teaching too for Bobby Wilder too, when he can point to other guys, you know, hey, you were recruited. This guy wasn't, you know, hey, what are you doing with your talent? You could have gone anywhere and this guy had to walk on here. So, you know, I love guys like TJ Rick. So congratulations once again. Good luck on that scholarship for being one of the top 10 walk-ons in the country. And by the way, just to finish that thought, you know, JJ Watt was a 2-star recruit out of high school, according to Rivals. So, yeah, I just can't do that recruiting stuff. Finally, let me apologize again for basketball. I wanted to get some basketball talk on, but to be honest, I just don't have time for it right now. And I tend to like my sports in season. So while I'm football, I focus on football. But as soon as ODU football's over, you know, it's usually December, mid-December. It's perfect time to start following basketball. I did watch the first couple games just for my 2 cents. It's good to see Freeman and Baycoat. Looks like an extremely formidable backcourt that's going to really cause problems. And so that was really good to see. And it was nice to see Freeman. I know a couple, you know, easy ones early, but, you know, he came out and he played the role of the lead dog, which he needs to do, and he looks comfortable in that situation. So, and once again, moving forward, once football season's over, we'll do a little bit more in-depth on basketball. I'm already in the works on getting player interviews, but it's just a little too much for me to handle right now. So we're going to kind of stick with football until after the bowl game. And then moving forward, I'll probably try and do a one maybe every 2 weeks, maybe every 2.5 weeks, depending on the basketball games and who's playing and what happens. I'll probably be a little more fluid with basketball podcasts. But anyways, that's another episode, episode number 10 of the Monarch Asylum podcast. Very proud of that number. Once again, thanks everyone for tuning in. I hope you like what you hear. If you got anything you want to tell me, tweet me at ODU Asylum or hit me on the message boards or hit me on the Facebook page at Monarch Asylum on the Facebook page at ODU Asylum on the Twitter. But once again, thanks for tuning in. And let's talk, hopefully talking about that 6-win next week. Get a big win in Hattiesburg over the Fighting Favs. All right, guys. We'll see you next week.